Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and today we're going to take a look at the news of 2012, talk about what are the top news stories of the year, and also take a look at some of the underreported news stories of 2012. We're joined this morning by Marisa DeMarco. She is a journalist and an editor, formerly with the Weekly Alibi here in Albuquerque. Also, Alexa Scherzinger. She is editor with the Santa Fe Reporter. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining me. So lots to cover this morning. A lot happened this year, but then I guess every year is kind of like that, right?
It's always hard to encapsulate a year.
So in the KUNM News Department, we had a conversation a couple of weeks ago amongst all of our reporters and stringers, our new news director. What is our conception of what the top news stories are for 2012? And we came up with a list of five stories, and they included New Mexico becoming the state with the biggest discrepancy between rich and poor. New Mexico getting off the swing, so to speak, going all blue in the presidential race. We kind of lost our presidential swing state status this year. Use of personal email accounts by state officials to do public business. Also, the Department of Justice investigation into the Albuquerque Police Department and use of force by police officers in light of the 26 officer-involved shootings that there have been over the past 3 years, 17 of them fatal. And also the advent or the continuation of mega fires and extreme drought in New Mexico as kind of the new normal in weather pattern and impact of weather. Those were the top five that we took a look at and decided these were the ones. These were the ones. And we posted a survey online, and we're going to get to some of the results from that survey a little bit later. Alexa, I want to go to you. Of course, this week's edition of the Santa Fe Reporter has your top 10 news stories.
Right.
Let's start at number 10 and do a little bit on each one, work our way down. And we'll go to you, Marisa, to get your input on these also.
So we have kind of a Santa Fe-centric list, but most of these are also statewide stories. Our number 10 was the kind of rise of Governor Susana Martinez on the national scale, speaking at the Republican National Convention, being considered as a vice presidential possibility, none of which actually, you know, came to pass. She's still our governor, and she has said that she wants to remain in New Mexico. But, you know, we consider that kind of a story for sure. Should I just go all
yeah,
the way
go
down?
For it. Go for it. I may pause you at certain points, but go for it.
Okay. So number 9, we had the Jerome Black Jr. scandal, which resulted in PRC reform. We thought this was a big story because often in New Mexico we have these scandals, but nothing happens. It's really great that, you know, we have the think tank, Think New Mexico. We have lawmakers coming up with reforms, and then we have voters voting on them, all of which is very valuable.
And those were three constitutional amendments that
That's
were
right.
approved by voters that right. affect the PRC.
Yeah, and so that'll continue to be a story, too, because we don't know exactly the details haven't been figured out yet. So we'll be eager to see how that goes this year. We put drought as our number 8 and the fires continuing. In Santa Fe, I can definitely say that, you know, we didn't have Las Conchas this year, obviously. So I think it's faded from consciousness a little, even though the drought continues to get worse. So something we should keep tabs on. Number 7 for us was the expansion of Obamacare and states considering whether to expand Medicaid, which, of course, is the program for low-income people. A quarter of New Mexicans are on Medicaid, so that's going to be a really important decision for the governor to make in the coming year.
And she hasn't said, Governor Martinez has not said whether her administration plans to expand the system to include, I think it's like 140,000 adults, low-income adults, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And but Bieber at UNM has done a study actually saying that this will be, I don't remember what the number, 8 million or 8 billion, something like that, of economic impact for the state. So it would be a good thing to expand it. Number 6 is a very Santa Fe story, but we just have been covering some of the revitalization efforts in Santa Fe and the kind of trying to wake Santa Fe up in terms of nightlife. Of course, you guys in Albuquerque maybe don't know
what nightlife. I'm from Santa Fe. No
we
offense,
do
Santa
have
Fe.
It. We do have it. Number 5 was the the report by the Department of Health in New Mexico that said that prescription drug overdose deaths are on the rise and have surpassed cocaine and heroin, which we thought was a big story, especially in northern New Mexico. High sales of oxycodone there, and the Albuquerque Journal actually did this great series on kind of what those impacts are. Number four, education reform, which sort of got started this year from the Martinez administration. I don't think she got everything she wanted, had to do some initiatives from the administrative level rather than using the legislature. Also in Santa Fe, we have a new superintendent who seems very reform-minded, so that's exciting for us. Number three was the economy. It still sucks. We have a fiscal cliff. Yay.
I think your segment was the stupid economy.
Exactly.
As opposed to the it's the economy stupid.
Yes.
I thought that was cute.
Yeah. And we also have a big story this week on the fiscal cliff if you need to know how it will affect you. Number two was the rise of money in elections, which was huge, unprecedented, millions of dollars being poured into local races that have never seen anything more than, you know, a few hundred before, and how that sort of affected who's going to be serving in our legislature this year. And number one, we put the year in closed government, which is our cover story this week, and is all about Emailgate and the aftermath of public officials conducting public business in private.
So, Marisa, does this 1 through 10 list, I mean, obviously there's some Santa Fe-centric stories from the reporter, does it kind of jive with the work that you did this year at the Weekly Alibi with respect to prioritizing the stories that you covered this year?
Yeah, sure. I think a lot of those are definitely topics that we touched on. I think we took some different angles, obviously some more Albuquerque-centric angles. The things that we thought were important were that I have on my list of things that I thought were a little bit underreported was the cuts to the developmental disability waiver, which affects lots of families caring for people with developmental disabilities. And then you touched a little bit on also the vast amount of money that was poured into the elections this year. And I think in the state we can talk about how that really affected the legislature, but in a kind of a broader sense, it's also interesting how it didn't affect some races. And as you said, the readers or the listeners here at KUNM are interested in how the state went so solidly blue when so many millions and millions of dollars were pumped into supporting Republican candidates. I was really interested in the Navajo Nation's lawsuit against Urban Outfitters. I think there's kind of
explain what that was.
Sure.
For folks who might not be familiar.
Sure. So Urban Outfitters was selling some items like flasks and underwear that they were marketing as being Navajo. And the Navajo Nation has a trademark on its name and is suing the national chain in a lawsuit in New Mexico's district court. To say like, hey, you can't do this with our name. You can't just appropriate our culture and use it to sell your items. And I think that story kind of preceded a large look overall this year at people co-opting and misusing Native ideas for fashion or for, you know, whatever cultural statement that they're trying to make. And so I thought that was actually a really interesting cultural story that kind of started here and went national.
The Fronteras desk did quite a bit of reporting on this story, and we run some of their radio reports. I think it was Laurel Morales. She reports from Flagstaff and covers the Navajo Nation, and she did some very interesting reporting on that we've run here too.
Yeah, and it's a long-time problem that I think is becoming more known around the country as being a problem. I think it's often ignored. The other thing that kind of came up for us this year in Albuquerque was the increased regulations on sexually oriented businesses, which are, I think essentially they're just talking about strip clubs, requiring the strip clubs to keep more detailed records on their employees, and those records are subject to inspection by city employees. And that raised a lot of concerns about stalkers for strippers in Albuquerque. And about civil rights for civil rights advocates in Albuquerque. I thought that was a really important story. I was also interested, speaking of the PRC, and there was kind of this story that I don't think got enough coverage, and I'm interested to do more on it. But Public Regulation Commissioner Jason Marks, he's outgoing. He pushed to get New Mexico's prison phone rates to be decreased because the phone companies can charge these exorbitant rates. And so he got a cap put on that in New Mexico, and then there's a larger national effort also to get that implemented nationwide. And there's a lot of interesting studies about how better contact with your family decreases recidivism. So that seems like also to be a fairly important long-term project.
Well, the Alibi did a lot of reporting on the Albuquerque Police Department in the past year. Talk a little bit about the priority of that story when you think about top stories this year.
I feel like we've been covering troubles at the Albuquerque Police Department since 2009. And that story really starts with a conversation about the police not using their belt tapes on a regular basis as they're required to do by their very own standard operating procedures. And the problems that that presented when people were taking cases involving potential civil rights violations to court and not having good evidence because those belt tapes weren't being used. But obviously, the story as it developed this year is that in late November, the Department of Justice announced that it's going to go ahead and launch a full-on investigation into APD. Now, I was at a meeting about a year ago between families of people who had been killed by APD and the Department of Justice, and the families asking, what are you guys going to do? Do you have any information about whether or not you're going to conduct an investigation? And feeling really dissatisfied with what the Department of Justice had to say at that meeting. And I just think it's interesting that the investigation has been announced. It's looking into whether there's a pattern or practice of civil rights violations as related to officer-involved shootings. But it's really unclear, like, how far-ranging that investigation is going to be. I don't think we have a sense yet of what it's going to cover. Is it going to cover, for instance, whether the Albuquerque Police Department handles evidence correctly at crime scenes? That's come up hugely in the Mary Hahn civil rights case, as well as the Tara Chavez civil rights case. Is it going to cover the power of the oversight committee that oversees the Albuquerque Police Department?
The oversight committee is the committee that receives complaints about officers, correct?
From citizens and looks into them. And they don't really have the power to offer any kind of reprimand for if violations are perceived. And then is it going to cover the practice of using investigative grand juries to determine whether whether a shooting has been ruled justified? So, I mean, it's a sprawling story. It's the biggest story in 2012. It's going to be the biggest story in 2013. And this is just going to be an ongoing piece.
Well, and that's one of the things that I think I always realize at the end of the year when I look back. I think, you know, these stories were big this year, and they also are related to continuing conditions or chronic, you know, weather conditions or social challenges that communities are facing or organizations that are demonstrating patterns of behavior or, you know, it's really, are things changing or not in the news, you know, news coverage of these kinds of stories. Marisa DeMarco is a journalist and an editor. Alexa Scherzinger is editor with the Santa Fe Reporter. This is the KUNM call-in show. We'd like to hear from you about what you think was the top news story of 2012. The number to call locally here in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can also post your comments online at KUNM.org. We're going to take a very, very quick break, and then we'll be right back with your calls and more on 2012 in the news.
This holiday season, Lieber's Travel Consultants can answer your questions about luggage, travel accessories, and gifts for everyone on your list. Lieber's Luggage, located on Manal across from Sears. Lieber's Luggage is a valued supporter of KUNM.
Support for KUNM comes from the not-for-profit New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where members earn rewards for their relationship, checking, credit cards, auto loans, and mortgages. Details and calculator on member rewards at nmefcu.org.
This is the KUNM call-in show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and we're talking about the top news stories of 2012. Let's go to the phones now. Let's hear from Glenn in Hemis Springs. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for the programs all year long, Elaine. They've been great. I think there's a difference between you all who live in cities in New Mexico and those of us who live in rural areas and how that impacts our feel about stories. For me, the big story was the Gila fire that then, of course, connected to the Las Conchas. It's dry in the mountains, even though we just got our snow a year ago. Now we got the majority, almost all of our snow, only in December, and then no more snow. And I've heard said that even here in the Jemez Mountains, we'll have firefighters returning in February. So I guess for me that would be a top story.
Thanks, Glenn. Let's go to Clifton in Albuquerque. Good morning, Clifton. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hey, you kind of said one thing that was crossing my mind. Jerome Black on your show told us a long time ago that the fuel plume under the base was not going to have a dramatic effect on our water. Later on, it turned out that it was revealed that it did. And I know that he was not, you know, that his issue was about credit card usage and so forth. But you talked about a broader pattern of corruption. And so I was just curious to know if these stories are letting anybody else look at this and say, hey, is there a broader pattern of not only corruption, but essentially exploitation of the citizenry? That's kind of what I'm seeing. And I think that goes to the police story as well.
Alexa, what do you think about that question about the PRC and then government in a broader sense?
Yeah, I think it's a very valid question. And I do think that, you know, we have a pattern in New Mexico. You can just look at the jokes people tell in New Mexico about how government is run. So, yeah, that's really important to look at it in a broader sense. But I think also when it comes to reform, it's good to take it a small step at a time. And I think that's what the PRC reform is.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Marisa?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think definitely that there was enough of a problem that people took notice. And this year we made three constitutional amendments. We voted in three constitutional amendments relating to the Public Regulation Commission, including creating standards for who's allowed to serve in that position. It's a high-paying position. It's hugely powerful. It oversees so many of our industries here in New Mexico. So I would say that there's a problem, and people are noticing, and they're working on it.
Let's take another call. Romeo in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Elaine. Great show, as always. You're my favorite.
Thanks, Romeo.
I just wanted to say, you know, like, one of the big stories is a story that never happened, coverage on Gary Johnson, one of our own, a former New Mexico governor that really made a run for the White House. I think had you given him a little more love, maybe he might have done a little bit better. But unfortunately, you all took the route that everyone else takes. You know, we only have two choices. And that's not really American, in my opinion.
Marisa. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Romeo.
Oh, and then the other thing, I want to speak on the farce that is called the Department of Justice investigation on APD. Did anyone else catch that news conference with Schultz and Barry and Perez when they announced this so-called investigation? Did you see any inkling of concern on Schultz's face or Barry? They were smiling. You know why they were smiling? Because they're not worried. They're like Alfred E. Newman up there. What? Do you worry? They're not worried because they know nothing's going to happen, no matter what the so-called findings are going to be. They're not going to be held accountable. There's not going to be any criminal persecution for the wrongs they've done to our community. And meanwhile, we got upwards of 30 people shot by these APD thugs. And maybe they should maybe not do so many steroids. Huh? All right.
Thanks, Romeo. Marisa, you had a response to that.
Sure. I was mostly thinking about the comment about Gary Johnson. Early on in the campaign, we did a cover story on Gary Johnson, and I interviewed him, and we also continued to follow him during the campaign. But I do think that what the caller is saying is valid. We really thought, it was thought at the beginning of the election cycle, that Gary Johnson was going to take a larger percentage of the vote in New Mexico, and he did not take anywhere near what people expected him to take. Now, part of that could be that the election was pegged right up at kind of the last minute as being a really close one, when in fact it was not at all really very close. And so it was, you know, Gary Johnson thought that that had a big influence on his numbers. People were afraid to vote third party. The unfortunate thing is that it's really challenging for third party candidates to get on the ballot in New Mexico. And if he had taken, I believe it's 5% of the vote, then libertarians would have had an automatic place on the ballot and the next time around. So it's very unfortunate that he wasn't able to take that 5%. And I think, you know, nationwide, there's big concern about our two-party system. And we're looking at, I think, eventually seeing more third-party candidates. And New Mexico would be a really interesting place to see something like that happen. Our politics out here are different than they are in other places. We are much less predictable, despite the fact that, as you mentioned, we were one of two blue western states in a sea of red this year. But we're a lot harder to peg, and I think you could see the rise of a third party out here, a strong third party candidate in New Mexico easily soon.
Let's go to another call. Samantha in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just calling on the story about the governor emails. The use of private emails by elected officials isn't illegal, and it's common, but we've never heard about it in the news before. And I'm just curious how the governor's underwear purchases on her private emails is really public business or relevant to us. I mean, you're comparing underwear purchases and iTunes to the Pentagon Papers.
Alexa.
That's a fair point, for sure. That was not the focus of our story, as you know from reading it. That's true. We were doing a story that was about the process of uncovering these emails, so we thought that the way that we got these from Attorney General Gary King was relevant to the story. However, of course, the focus of the story is on why public officials are using private email to discuss public business. And that was what the bulk of the story was about.
What about this question of this having been a normal practice in years past, and that this year it kind of coming to the fore and becoming a big issue this year? Why haven't we heard about this before?
I'm not sure. I mean, I haven't been the editor of this paper for more than, you know, since Governor Richardson.
In your mind, what do you think was different about this year?
I'm not sure. I mean, you know, it was reported that Keith Gardner had given this directive of let's all use private email to hide things. And then it became apparent that that probably didn't explicitly happen. I would say this administration is not different from any others. I think the reporting on it has probably been different. And, you know, maybe we've been more aggressive than people have been in the past.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, that there's been a real push by politicians statewide to talk about transparency. So it makes a lack of transparency really stand out. And I think that's something that you talked about in the article this week, is that everybody's talking about transparency. It's a big part of the campaign cycle. People are creating, you know, websites in which you can, you know, search out employees' salaries and government contracts. And so it makes any effort to, you know, obfuscate government business really stark,
right,
in contrast.
Exactly.
Alexa, talk a little bit more about the reasons why you chose this as the top story from the Santa Fe Reporter's perspective. And, you know, without going into all of the detail, you know, it's this very kind of twisty, windy story that you tell in your cover story this week. But give us some of the highlights or some of the things that were most meaningful to you in your evolution and understanding this story.
I think at the very tip, the very beginning of this story, we thought, you know, maybe this is a one-off news story about how public officials have this culture of using private email in order to possibly avoid public records inspection of public records act requests to view that information. Then it sort of grew and grew, and of course, as most people who have followed this story know, Michael Corwin, who runs a liberal super PAC, is a big opponent of the governor. and was the former opposition researcher for Bill Richardson, is the man behind a lot of this and has, you know, was leaking emails to us. And then, you know, we eventually got them again through the Attorney General's office. And so I think this, you know, then it became political, but it also is, like Marisa said, it's certainly a testament to how political speech does not match political action. And, you know, saying that we're so transparent, you know, we've had a lot of trouble getting to talk to the governor's office on other stories, not just this story, as I'm sure many news organizations had.
And this was a, this has been a pattern with previous administrations.
Absolutely.
The Richardson administration was, at least from KUNM's perspective and my perspective here, was equally as hard to access.
Right. I agree completely.
Which drives me crazy as a reporter.
It's very frustrating.
I think, you know, we pay the government officials a salary to be accountable to the people. We pay the spokespeople of these government officials a salary to respond to reporters. Like, I really think if we're going to go ahead and talk transparency, we're going to talk emails, we're going to talk government websites, let's go ahead and talk about how politicians should be responding to reporters' phone calls with one-on-one interviews and how that benefits the public.
The Society of Professional Journalists Rio Grande chapter had a, you know, a kind of a an event a few months ago, and their flyer, they created an image of this cat with a hat on, reading a newspaper, kind of glaring over the top of its glasses with the headline, you know, "Sources not calling you back," and that has become the kind of it's the image that I take with me when I'm experiencing that, and I call it angry reporter kitty. So sometimes I get into angry reporter kitty phase, and it's not a new experience for anyone in the news industry. Alexa, talk a little bit more about the discoveries that the reporter made in your exploration of the email story. What do you think is the biggest, most important aspect of that story that was reported this year?
It's hard to say because it's a really kind of wide-ranging story. I mean, I would say that, you know, seeing, I think the first part of the email story that broke was Pat Rogers, who's a Republican National Committeeman, former board member of the Foundation for Open Government, and seeing kind of the influence he had and saying, hey, you should hire this person, you should fire this person, or, like, can't you find some non-homosexuals to hire? You know, like, these sort of ridiculous things that showed both a level of influence and access that most regular New Mexicans do not enjoy, especially reporters, and but also some, you know, some other more serious stuff, such as, hey, I need to set up a meeting with the governor's staff for this lobbying client of mine, which really just shows, you know, there's a lot going on that we're not seeing. And so I think really the story is about the sum total of all those things put together, you know, how much of government is actually happening behind closed doors rather than one particular thing.
Was this so-called Emailgate story the top story in your mind for 2012? The number to call locally here in Albuquerque is 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866 or post your comments online at KUNM.org. Let's go to the phones. Thomas in Albuquerque, you're on the air.
It's a crime to steal private political information, and as we know, that's what Watergate was all about, the breaking into a political organization and the eavesdropping. So I want to know, why aren't you guys focusing on the cyber burglary, which is the real crime that's being investigated by the FBI, instead of holding the burglars up like heroes? And also, why is Michael Corwin so quiet so quickly?
Alexa.
We don't know that these are stolen, and we don't know that there are burglars, so I wouldn't answer anything with that assumption as the baseline. The Martinez administration, of course, has said that they were stolen. We have chosen to focus on the content of the emails because we believe that's of more relevance to the public, just in terms of how government is being carried out and how taxpayer money is being spent. So that was the rationale for our focus there.
Your thoughts on that, Marisa?
Yeah, that makes sense to me, the way that they chose to report it. If it's not clear whether those emails are stolen, then that doesn't make sense as a focus for the story.
Let's take another phone call. Don in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes. 24 million gallons of cancer-causing poison closing in on our city's wells from the Kirtland Air Force Base jet fuel spill. If China had caused this massive threat to Albuquerque's water, would the city officials take a strong public stand to stop it? If Al-Qaeda were responsible, would the city officials take a strong public stand now to prevent this catastrophe? If Russia had created this underground river of poison to wage chemical warfare against us, would our officials take a strong public stand to protect our water? Are they afraid to stand up to our own U.S. government? Are they afraid of offending Kirtland Air Force Base? Are they afraid of being branded unpatriotic and extremist?
Good question. Marisa, your response.
That's Don Schrader, right? Hi, Don Schrader.
Hi.
I agree that this is maybe another big underreported story of 2012. And I found it interesting that when we were conducting our candidate endorsement interviews, we asked all of the county commissioners, particularly those in District 2, which includes the South Valley and parts of that region, what they thought about the Kirtland spill. And it seems to be that for the most part, everyone agrees that it should be cleaned up, and everyone agrees that it should be cleaned up by the feds. So it doesn't seem like there's a ton of local action in terms of trying to figure out what that's going to do, when it should get cleaned up, if we can, as a local community, figure out how to clean it up more quickly than whatever the federal government is proposing. I agree with Don's point that this is a big story. It's a big deal. And I think we're hopefully going to see more on it soon.
I think part of the reason why that particular story didn't make it to our top five list on the KUNM top five stories of 2012 survey was partially because it's so Albuquerque centric. That it isn't a huge story, and lots of questions about how that spill is being addressed now, what kind of information is known about it, and what the plan is for cleaning it up, but that it affects a portion of the state population and not the state as a whole necessarily.
I think, too, that environmental stories can be very slow developing stories, which means that they can kind of fall off the radar for a little while. But we do need to keep a focus on them before they become emergencies and very, very pressing stories. So
let's go to the phones again. Simon in Albuquerque, good morning. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I believe the awarding of the public access TV station contract, management contract to UPublic, I think that's a top story. This is the evisceration of free speech, the last podium the average person had to get out their concerns to the public at large, the shenanigans that went behind the awarding of this contract to UPublic, the secrecy involved in the mayor's administration and city council's failure to investigate this. I think it was a total sham. And the people's last podium to be seen. Thank you.
Marisa, former editor with the Weekly Alibi, you all did some coverage of this particular story this year, right?
We did. And actually, our offices were just a couple doors down from quote-unquote former offices. And I remember the day I came to work and there was an armed guard outside of quote-unquote offices preventing the people who worked there from getting in because they were I guess there were some concerns that maybe they would take some equipment they weren't supposed to take and it just seemed like such an extreme measure for quote-unquote. So I was walking to work and there's this armed guard, and so I started calling the quote-unquote folks, and they, sure enough, they had showed up to work. There was an armed guard barring them from entering their very own offices, and they had lost their contract after 30 years of doing community media, and it had been awarded to someone else. So, I mean, we're going to see what UPublic does with the station, it's hard to tell at this point, but, quote-unquote had that channel for 30 years and really made it their mission to reach out to community members. So I'm looking forward to seeing what UPublic turns it into. And quote-unquote, by the way, is still around as an organization And we'll see what happens from them as well.
We're talking about what you think the top news story is from 2012. We have Alexa Scherzinger here from the Santa Fe Reporter and Marisa DeMarco, formerly the editor with the Weekly Alibi here in Albuquerque. Let's take another call. Mary in Tijeras. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. The guest just admitted that this email gate, for lack of a better word, was also an issue in the Richardson administration. And, you know, I'm curious why, if that is so, this story did not percolate, as your guest said, to the top during his administration. You know, journalists, unlike attorneys, do not take an oath to be a zealous advocate for one side or the other. You're to be objective. And if this was an issue in Richardson administration, it should have been brought to light. And your guests can say it was slow to percolate, but honestly, the general tenor of the Richardson administration, there was a story there. And so I think I'd like your guests to honestly look into their minds as to why this email gate did not percolate until now. I'll sign off for now. Thank you.
Alexa.
Thanks, Mary. That's a good point. I would say, I mean, I think that this probably happened during the Richardson administration. Again, we did not cover it at that time. We did cover other transparency issues during his administration. But I would say the big difference now is the fact that these emails were leaked. So, you know, like, we would not have gotten most of these emails any other way. As we state in the story, we have filed Public Records Act requests for such emails that we knew existed, and they have not been provided for us, even though they concerned public business, which the Attorney General has said that is a public record. Even if you send it on your Gmail account, if it concerns public business, it's a public record. And so there is some discrepancy in different state agencies on whether those emails need to be provided to the public, to journalists, to anyone who asks for them under the public records laws of New Mexico. So I think that's a big reason we haven't seen this before, is because there wasn't a leak.
I did have Gwyneth Dolan from the Foundation on Open Government and also Vicki Harrison with Common Cause on the KUNM call-in show several months ago, talking specifically about this issue of state officials using private email accounts to do public business. And, you know, one of the interesting things to come out of that conversation is that there is no way to know whether you've been provided the public records that you've requested.
Totally.
Unless you have either access to those documents some other way. The KUNM newsroom has done some reporting on a public records request with the Albuquerque Police Department. Records that another organization had gotten, and then when KUNM requested those documents, they were heavily redacted. You can find more on that story online at KUNM.org. But this kind of reveals this issue of how do you know that you're being provided the public documents that you've requested unless you have some reason to believe that those aren't all of the documents that should have been provided, and that there's the accountability in the system is part of what is lacking, right? Even with Alexa, explain what the Attorney General has to do with the enforcement of that law.
Right. I mean, this is an important element of our story, too, which is, you know, when we filed the test IPRA Inspection Public Records Act request for an email we knew existed, we didn't receive it. We did file a formal complaint with the Attorney General's office. It's been 4 months since we filed that complaint. So, you know, that's kind of another element to this story, is that enforcement for this stuff falls to the Attorney General, and it doesn't always happen quickly, as we know. And, you know, but we can also say the number of complaints related to IPRA has risen in the past year. So that is some reflection, too, of how big the problem is.
We are taking your calls this morning on top news stories of 2012. Let's go to the phones. Deborah in Santa Fe. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, Elaine. This is Deborah, your reporter.
Hi, Deborah.
And, hi. I just wanted to point out something. As you know, I was a staffer, a public information officer for Governor Richardson at two high-profile agencies. And I just have to take issue with a couple of the callers who swear that this has been done in past administrations, this conducting public business on private emails. We had many staff conversations amongst the PIOs as to our duty to provide information that we had and to archive every email that had to do with state business. And the governor's office also archived those, and they are at the public records agency of the state. We were never told to use private email to conduct public business. And I am telling you this as absolute truth. It was never my experience nor any other. And we were a close-knit group of folks as PIOs for the agencies. By the way, they're the same number of PIOs as there were in the last administration, despite the claim that there have been fewer. We worked with the governor's office to provide information for every IPRA request that came in. And I personally responded to every inquiry from a reporter right away. I'm a former reporter. I'm a reporter now. So I know that reporters have a job to do, and it's very important to help them and for them to help you get the public's information out there in an honest and open way. And that was our goal. So I don't know whose experience has been that it happened, you know, in past administrations, and there's some deep, you know, dark story there that's waiting to be eked out. But I can tell you from the inside, it was never my experience.
Thanks for your call, Deborah. Let's go to Ricardo in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm very glad you're doing this. This is a very necessary show today. And I have two things I'd like you to discuss. And the first is just one name, Jay McCleskey. A lot more needs to be revealed about that situation, the fifth floor in the roundhouse. The other issue that I think is very important is the lack of transparency with a state fair. I don't know that there's ever been a genuine independent audit of that enterprise. The governor came in, Governor Martinez came in declaring a new era of transparency, and it's been anything but. So thanks. I'll sign off. Would love to hear your responses. Thank you.
Great, Ricardo. Thanks. Let's go to first Marisa DeMarco, a former editor with the Weekly Alibi journalist. Your thoughts on Jay McCleskey. Is he himself a top story of 2012?
I think the PACs, the political PACs.
First, explain who he is for me briefly, or so, Alexa, either one of you.
Sure. So he's an advisor to Governor Susana Martinez. He's largely credited, I think, with getting her elected. And he ran I think, the biggest state PAC in New Mexico. And I think that he had a lot of influence. Also, his Susana PAC and the McCleskey PAC had a lot of influence on who got elected to the state legislature this year. So I don't know. Maybe he's the top story of 2012. I kind of want to think a little bit also about what people are saying with regard to how do we know whether the Richardson administration did or didn't use personal emails to conduct, you know, government business? And I think the answer is that ultimately we don't know, and maybe we're just at kind of the very beginning of discovering public records law in the modern age. And, you know, I think the point, too, about not knowing whether you're getting the records that you've asked for is an important one. So I think we're going to see, hopefully we'll see these records laws continue to be strengthened. And as far as it not having been covered previously, I think that probably the way the coverage is happening now, you can bet that this will be a story that continues to be covered for future administrations, regardless of political party. You have to start somewhere, and I guess we're starting this year.
Alexa, Jay McCleskey.
Yeah, we actually have, if you want to open our paper to page 7, we have a long letter from Jay McCleskey who wrote in about how successful Reform New Mexico Now, which is his political action committee, was during the elections, because we did a story a couple of weeks ago about the Republican Party not gaining as much in the House as they had hoped for. So he sort of has a great rebuttal that's in the front of our paper this week. I was sort of hoping he would call in today, but I guess we're not that lucky. I think, you know, one thing that's worth pointing out was that for our story on transparency in the governor's office, we were unable to reach anyone in the governor's office for comment. All of them declined to talk to us except for Jay McCleskey. Mm-hmm. He's not a public employee. He has no requirement to talk to the media. We appreciate that he does, because we always want to get as much insight as we can into any story. So that was sort of an interesting, I mean, I think he is painted as kind of this GOP mastermind. He's often compared to Karl Rove, which may or may not be true, but he does sort of serve a quasi-governmental function, which I think is interesting.
In essence, what did he say in his opinion piece that you, or his letter that you published?
he just pointed out the gains the Republican Party made during these elections, which I think there was a net gain. I have it open here, but you know, of course, the most important thing they did probably was defeat two out of three Democratic leaders. That would be Tim Jennings and Mary Jane Garcia. And so that signifies a big change for them. And, you know, a third of the incoming legislators are new, many of whom are Republicans. So it could be a real game changer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you do any reporting on the New Mexico Expo story? That was the kind of part two.
Yes.
Of.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
We did a cover story on that a while ago. We also have a sidebar about it in our transparency story because it was related to, you know, a lot of the emails were related to this about how the Downs at Albuquerque got this. The short story is that there was a request for a proposal. Two companies put in bids. One company got it. That company, the Downs at Albuquerque is the name of it, had connections to the Martinez administration, and there were some whistleblowers among state fair commissioners, including Charlotte Rohde, who were kind of like, hey, this doesn't seem right. So that was a story that we have covered and I think probably deserves some recognition as one of the top stories.
Got it. We did also get some comments from Dan Mayfield with the New Mexico Business Weekly. He sent in some of their top stories. And as he writes, the New Mexico Business Weekly covers stories that impact wallets and the economy and in turn the state's budget. And he says that the Loveless ABQ Health Partners debacle, which left 80,000 people in healthcare limbo, is one of the top stories from his perspective. The launch of the Felix Baumgartner in southern New Mexico from the Red Bull Stratos that was coordinated by a local company. Another top story. The fiscal cliff. And goodness, the fiscal cliff. I guess we'll see. Right? Companies spending millions to update malls, he said, is another top story. The loss of First Solar and the impact on state tax policy, state laws, and the impact on the Spaceport America. The recent news is that the creator of Spaceport America is threatening to pull out if liability laws affecting liability aren't changed.
Sure.
He does agree on the PRC rules story as a top story, and energy and how PNM is dealing with it with its 2015 energy plan. He says that those are the top stories from his perspective.
Those are good picks.
Yeah, Dan Mayfield with New Mexico Business Weekly. Let's take one more call. Javier in Albuquerque, good morning. You're on the air.
Great. Thank you very much. It's good to follow those callers that came a few callers ago about that were talking about, while pointing the finger at the Richardson administration and talking about you know, how the same things happened back then. But what I think what we're seeing, one of the main stories in 2012 has been this overall theme of the governor siding with her political party versus doing what's right for New Mexico. And the reason why I think that's important is because I think it's no secret, and this has been in the news significantly, that we're pulling up the rear when it comes to job creation. We're number one in income inequality. We have the lowest number of people insured in the country. And the governor, you know, has the opportunity to do the right thing and to expand Medicaid, to increase transparency of our tax giveaways. But she, and this is going to play out in the 2013 legislature, that she, you know, she's got a predicament. She's shooting for national public office, but right now New Mexico has significant issues that she has not addressed. And that's, I think that's been a significant story.
Marisa, your thoughts?
I think that what you're touching on kind of segues into one of KUNM's top five, which was that there's an extreme income gap in New Mexico. It's the biggest income gap in the country. And the census also reported that we have the largest number of people in poverty in the state. So we are effectively now the poorest state. And how does that play into healthcare reform? How does that play into education reform? Because I think a lot of advocates for people in poverty would argue that those are probably the most important factors in addressing our economic troubles, which are our economic troubles are not just a matter of like, you know, big businesses are closing down, although that's certainly a factor. But we have always been an impoverished state. And now that we're, again, topping a really negative list, how is the state going to confront that, especially when state coffers aren't as full as they used to be and a lot of funding for programs that help people in poverty has been cut so drastically? I think that the caller's question really touches on something that the rest of your listeners also thought was really important this year.
Alexa, in your mind, what is one of the top underreported stories of 2012?
I would say that actually the poverty gap is, we haven't done a lot of reporting on it because it's a difficult thing to report. You know, you can end up with a story that's just sad and depressing, or you can end up with a problem that's too big to have an easy solution. And so that can be frustrating from a reporting perspective, but I think it's definitely one of our goals to be following up more in the upcoming years. And I think it will be addressed in the legislature through early childhood and other initiatives to try to combat that.
Well, KUNM has received some funding to do reporting specifically on issues of poverty and health. So we have a couple of staff, new staff members, including Tristan Ottone. He is a reporter, getting that project rolling. So I know that you can definitely count on hearing more reporting on poverty and health issues in New Mexico from the KUNM newsroom over the coming years. Marisa.
I think it's great that you're going to be focusing on that, because when I saw it on the list of your top five stories, I did some research to see what had been reported locally on it and found very, very little, just a few really, really brief mentions of the fact that we had made these lists and what our statistics were looking like. But there's definitely a lot of human story to tell there. So,
yeah, the KUNM Top Stories of 2012 survey. Again, KUNM listeners who responded chose mega fires and extreme drought as the number one story for 2012. 48% of people chose that one. 32% believed that the Department of Justice investigation into the Albuquerque Police Department's use of force was the second, was number two. So 32% said that was their number one story. And then we had the poverty and income disparity was 12% of people thought that one was the top story. Thanks to you both for joining me this morning to talk about top news stories of 2012. If you missed any of this program and you'd like to go back and hear it, we'll be posting the audio online at KUNM.org just shortly after the program. Next Thursday morning at 8, we have a special holiday program on the way for you. The Capitol Steps New Year's Special Politics Takes a Holiday. The Capitol Steps folks roast all kinds of different people, politicians. They're going to roast 2012 to a crisp with stories like best use of $3 billion to run for president, or worst place in public to admit you had a binder full of women, or most prostitutes to ever fit in the Secret Service's hotel, or worst haircut ever to demand to see anyone's birth certificate, much less the president's. All right. Those are some of the stories that you're going to hear on the Capitol Steps New Year's special next Thursday morning at 8. The following Thursday morning, January 3rd, will feature an Intelligence Squared debate program on evolution versus creation. And the KUNM call-in show will be back on January 10th. That's Thursday morning at 8 here on KUNM. Again, we do welcome your comments and questions about the show. Also, suggestions for show tips. The email address is callinshow@kunm.org. You can find more programs posted online at kunm.org. You can sign up to receive our podcast on iTunes. Lots more information online. Again, kunm.org. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks to Alexa Scherzinger from the Santa Fe Reporter and Marisa DeMarco, former editor with the Weekly Alibi, just as of last week, I understand. So no longer. She says that's okay, although her mic was already off. Thanks so much for joining us for the KUNM Call-In Show, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Have a very, very great holiday and a safe new year. I'm Elaine Baumgartel.